He stood center stage under the bright lights of Broadway, but it was the quiet whispers of the jungle that changed his life. Seth Stewart walked away from the fame, the roar of the crowd, and the spotlight, answering a deeper call, a spiritual one. From Hamilton and In the Heights to Vision Quests, Sweat Lodges, and Plant Medicine in the Forest, Seth's journey has taken him from the noise of the world to the stillness of the soul. His upcoming memoir, Follow Your Vision, Live Your Truth, arrives August 8th and offers a profound exploration of personal purpose, deep healing, and the often unexpected path to spiritual awakening. Joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Seth Stewart. Seth, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why? If I'm starting off and already can't get your name right, I'm in trouble, Seth.
No, we'll be all right.
Seth Stewart is with us now. Seth, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I was excited to see the book and the information that you're bringing forward. I went on a ayahuasca journey about 6 years ago, one that I wasn't sure I wanted to take, but a friend of mine said, this is safe. It's going to be interesting, Dave. It's going to change your life. And I went on this journey and had a facilitator there and my friend there by my side and went through it. And it was truly one of the most profound and beautiful experiences of my life. I remember walking out of it saying, I don't know that I ever need to do that again. Not because it was horrifying, not because it was bad, but I just kind of felt intense. Fulfilled. Yeah, it was just like, this is great. I don't think I need to do this again. However, 5 years later, the recent death of my father, my mom passing away 9 years ago, I kind of feel like maybe it's time to do another journey in this. So when you were talking about the changes and things that you've made in your life, that really kind of resounded through my lifetime and spoke to me. But let's set this for people. I mean, gosh, you were living the dream in a lot of people's opinions, right? Out there performing, doing the amazing Hamilton, and you were Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and In the Heights, and have had this remarkable run of success doing the work that you did, which had to be a bliss in itself, correct?
Yeah, correct. I mean, I did a lot of those shows and I was in the original cast of Hamilton. And then I took over that role, that Tony winning role from another gentleman. And yeah, it was from an outside in living the dream, and it was my dream. I lived it. But I also had vision to live that I've learned. And I feel like the dreams are things that you want to live. And your vision is kind of like either your higher calling, or if you don't believe in that, just something that pulls your heart, your gut, this thing that I have to do, this part of my exploration of my life. So I got to live my dreams, and now I'm living my vision. And now both are kind of coinciding. So it's I feel very lucky, and I kind of followed my heart the whole way and not listening to anybody else.
I love that element of it. And can I ask, just out of curiosity, kind of starting back in your life, has vision and intent and intention, manifestation always been part of who you are?
Absolutely. But it grew as I kept going into the woods for longer periods of time. And just to kind of keep in alignment with your show, I had spiritual experiences when I was young. But I kind of pushed them down because who you're going to explain some of these things to, right? It wasn't that frequent, but it was strong enough that I knew it even 3 years old or 4 years old or 7 years old. I'm like, these things happen. There's no one to talk to. But after my second Broadway show, I decided to go work at a primitive skills school. And when you're out in the woods for 6 months at a time, there's a lot of spiritual activity happening, right? And I had a great mentor of mine. His name was Tom Brown. He had one of the oldest primitive skill school in North America. And he passed away last year, and may he rest in peace. But he really taught us about vision as his mentor taught him about vision and how to sort of seek it within yourself. It's a little bit beyond your dreams. It's not just about you. It's about why you're here on this planet.
When you talk about this kind of program that you went through, can you give us a little bit more insight in that? Is that something that you can open up about?
Absolutely. So after my second Broadway show, because of the industry, I basically was burnt out. I went camping. I got lost. I thought to myself, wow, as a man, I don't know what to do out here. You know, I was a theater. I was a sports kid and a theater kid. I didn't mean to be a theater kid. It just happened. But I being burnt out from the industry and doing it so intensely for so long, I went camping, I got lost, there was coyotes around me, I got surrounded by a coyote pack, and I was like, I don't want to feel separate from them. So I went and started learning at the tracker school, and I took a few courses in 2010. And by 2012, I had an opportunity to go intern with them. Now, I had a business going at this time, a film and photography studio, and they gave me 2 weeks. And I knew at that time, I was like, I'm never going to have another opportunity to do something like this again. So I went out there, and we were, you know, 5-6 miles deep into the national forest. And it's everything off grid. The kitchen, you know, is with propane stoves and a tarp roof. And the lodge where you learn is also just, you know, tarped roof and, you know, well water. You shower with bucket water, you know, from the pond, the hand dug pond. We had composting toilets. So we were really living, you know, as much off the earth as we can. And we were helping facilitate like 100-person classes, whether it was a tracking class or basic primitive skills or even philosophy skills. And it just opened up a whole world to me. Now, the difference was, after running 100-person classes, there were about 4 interns. When everybody left, you could just feel the baseline go, shoo, right? And at night, we would be walking around without headlamps. That was part of, you know, kind of our training. It's let's move in the darkness and get comfortable with the darkness. Let's let the trees guide us to find the path. Let's let the blueberry bush us, you know, kind of push us back on the path. Let's use our awareness. Let's not be afraid of the dark, right? But right, that is the moment in 2012 where the spiritual activity started to heighten, where spirits were like flying by me, walking back to my tent or my primitive shelter at night, some hot, some cold, and I had to decipher what these energies were. And so that was a really good training experience for me.
Was it kind of a strange shift for ego? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but to go from Broadway star to living off the grid under a tarp roof and kind of living in this community, doing things, I'm sure, completely different than you were used to.
I loved it because it was the complete opposite of anything that I had ever experienced before. I was barefoot every day. You know, I only needed a certain amount of things that fit in a duffel bag. And so I love the stage. I love energy exchange with the audiences. There's nothing like a live performance, right? It makes us feel, it makes us experience and fall in love and, you know, go on these journeys and storytelling. I know you're a great storyteller. You know, I feel like that part of storytelling is ancient as being barefoot and learning primitive skills, right? So I loved both, but it didn't really hurt my ego because all I wanted to do was live this new experience.
Well, we'll continue this discussion and obviously dip into the next segment, these spirits and energies that started to present themselves to you, that made themselves known. What is that like? And confronting this in a new and enlightened way, are you able to differentiate? Are these spirits of humans? Are they spirits of the earth? Are they fae-like spirits? What type of activity is taking place? Or is it everything? Much like the experience you were having and I had through my ayahuasca journey, realizing that we are part of a much richer, bigger tapestry, that it is not just one cell in a movie screen that we're seeing. It's the entire projection. It's everything, the colors, the sound, the mix, the ground, the earth, the sky, the water. We'll talk about that next when we return. Seth Stewart, our guest, right here on the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. Seth Stewart, our guest this evening. And for those of you that are interested, his book will be coming out August 8th. Follow Your Vision, Live Your Truth. We'll put a link up for that on today's program guide for you as well, so you can find the book. Now, prior to the first break here, Seth, you were talking to me about going through this and learning to live off the land and become one with it, to trust in the environment. And talk to me a little bit about that, because it was quite an awakening, right? It wasn't just learning to walk a path that had been cut before you. This was something different, and spiritual realm started to bleed into your reality.
Yeah, it was very good beginning to my basic training of the spiritual realm and reawakening what I had already experienced as a child. So the biggest lesson that I learned from that experience on the spiritual side is discernment, right? When you have energies passing you, or when you're in your tent and things are like walking through the woods that you know they can't walk through that patch of blueberry bushes that's over an acre, you kind of go, you know, what the F, right? And you can feel the energy. So I had to get really good. And what I teach people is discernment, right? Is this energy a spiritual form, right? What is the energy trapped, right? Because some things would just, you know, want to mess with you. They have a pest sort of job. They're just there to pester you because they might be stuck entities. They might be stuck between realms. So really what happened is the veils that are over this physical realm started to disappear. The more I got in tune with myself and the more that I got in tune with nature, there was another spirit that was around my camp for months, ended up being my grandfather who I had never met. And I knew it was my grandfather because I was able to, after I was done, go speak to my father in person and say, hey, I met grandfather. And he was like, I don't know what you mean. You never met him. And I gave my father details. There's no way I could have known unless it was my actual grandfather. But it took me months being in those woods to decipher, okay, here's an ancestor of mine. Here's some entities that want to pester me because they're stuck between realms, or that's, they like to be playful. I never believed in fairies before, but again, being out there long enough, it took me a while to discern what these different energies were. And that's some of what I teach people, because the veils are all around us. It's just us through different medias and our environments and how we grew up that make those veils stronger. We're supposed to be able to access our ancestry and these spirit realms. We just kind of forgot how to. And so the biggest kind of basic training I learned was discernment of different spiritual energies beyond this physical realm.
Listen, we're at a point in history, Seth, where we have evolved to technology able to do remarkable things, to the point where you can go into a restaurant and not even speak to a person, type into a board, and somebody in the back makes your food, right? I mean, we've kind of limited even human contact with what we're able to do. And once we've learned this information, it's hard to unlearn. It seems that the ancestors had a much similar way. They had an ethereal internet that they could connect to. They had this ability to speak to one another in different areas, to see each other, to see things around them. This seems like such an amazing skill set and ability. Why do you think that was tamped down? Why put something like that learned? I can't see tomorrow somebody coming out and going, you know what? We're going to do away with computers and cell phones. We're just going to go back to home phones and letters. We never want to take a step back, but yet we were already at a point where communication was something bigger and broader than we even have right now. How do you think we lost that way?
I think we lost that way because it happened on purpose. And I want to say 23 years of real experience, real world experience and research. The biggest thing I've learned is that there are entities at play that are connected to world governments and that want to keep consciousness down. They want to, sort of kind of mind wipe us, that the fact that we're already telepathic, we are all, there's been so much scientific proof. I can't remember the astronaut's name that did that experiment from Earth. Oh my gosh, I love his book. I think it was Apollo 13.
I just spoke to somebody about this recently as well, and my mind is frozen. I know Story Musgrave did quite a bit with consciousness and work like that, but
basically they did an experiment where an astronaut went up to the moon and they were able to put a card down on the table down on Earth, and he was able to visually see it with his mind all the way on the moon. So science is already proving what we know spiritually. So the reason it's happening, again, from my research and real world experience, is that they want to keep consciousness down. Now, if you keep consciousness down, keep people in a low vibration, then they can't experience that. And they will realize that there's more beyond this realm. There is, it's something that all of our ancestors used to do. And we wouldn't be controlled as emotionally or mentally or even spiritually controlled. So it was a kind of a dumbing down of different populations over time, because we do have a power. We are energetic sovereign beings, and we're getting that back. So our superpowers, we have an opportunity for them to come back online in this amazing time period that we're in, even though it looks scary.
If I could take you back for a second to your Broadway work and theater, there are so many theaters around the world that are known to be haunted, and they're not always haunted by human spirits, but by other energies. You talk about frequency and vibration and the way that we communicate. Music is a powerful source, man, right? I mean, it can transcend time and space. Do you think that the theater draws this kind of presence because of the power that's there? Or do you think that theaters are kind of drawn to a location because of an already existing portal of energy? I'm just curious what your thoughts are, having been in both spaces and performing, and during those performances, have you ever had spiritual awakenings in a sense, or seen things?
I've never had it during one of my performances, but I have been in theaters that didn't necessarily feel haunted, but I'm like, there are energies here that have never left this building. And it didn't really hit until you just brought it up. But the ones that I can remember, there's like two or three offhand. I noticed they were around organs, like, you know, the musical, the older organs.
Right.
I remembered that they would, because I would explore theaters. I noticed they were around organs. And so theater has been around just as long. You know, if there was a church in your town, there's probably a theater in your town and a courthouse and very basic things. So I think it's just used to a place for them to do it. I don't necessarily know if theater or anything in particular draws them in as a portal.
I always thought, because of the kind of energy that's expelled in a place like that, the energy from the performers, the emotions that you're hitting in the audience, you know, from bringing you down to the deepest depths of sorrow and sadness to the heights, right? To bringing you to absolute joy and rapture. Listening, I've listened to Broadway plays and music where tears just begin streaming down my face because it's so powerful in what it's doing.
Well, I love that you're bringing that up, because it's something that I talk about in my book. Where I have noticed energy shift is in big concerts, because there are some concerts and music, especially the main music industry, where the music is actually bringing in sub tones that are dissonant tones that are actually creating an energy. And I have seen it with my eyes from experience. Wow. Creating these dissonant tones, and it's actually pulling the energy from the audience. It could be a 1,000-person crowd or 100,000-person crowd. And there are entities up in the field that feed off of that dissonant energy. It doesn't matter, rock concerts or hip hop concerts, there are some artists from different musical genres that create dissonant tones that open up those portals and allow things to come in and feed off the energy of the audience. So it is a real thing.
Seth Stewart, our guest. We'll be back with more Paranormal 360 right after this. Seth Stewart, our guest this evening, as we're discussing vision, opening up to new possibilities, seeing things that have always been around us that seem to want to be seen and recognized. And we're not just talking ghosts and that type of presence, but the energies of the world that we're in. Seth went from Broadway superstar to living in a shanty in the woods to really kind of come into contact with the earth and with Gaia, with the spirit of the world around us. And it profoundly changed him in the way that he looks at things and lives his life. Thank you for letting me take you back to the theater elements of that. I've always been curious, as somebody who's had the chance to perform, what it's like to sense that energy. I know, living in Minnesota, I've spoken to bands that have performed at First Avenue, and some have been performing when they see somebody climb up on stage and they'll turn and there's nobody there, or hearing things in the green room while they're sitting there waiting and they'll hear voices speak out and there's nobody there. So I'm fully aware there's energy everywhere and these type of venues hold it. But man, when you think about that, folks, and how many places I go to around the world that are haunted or experiencing energy, and you realize how limited in scope. Why is it a house? Why is it a theater? It's not. This energy is all around. Just people are there and they're noticing it more because they're in that place. And sometimes so unfocused from the rest of the world and the troubles of the world that things are able to finally make themselves seen.
Well, what is drawn? What have you noticed in your research, right? Like why certain energies draw to one house? Like I can understand, I've done some house clearings, that if there's a lot of trauma, if kids are getting beat, you know, if parents or, you know, couples are arguing against each other, that type of energy opens up portals, right? Like I always say, like demons and entities like flavors. They like the flavor of anger. They like the flavor of resentment or jealousy. That kind of opens up your auric field. And I'm assuming that it could do the same for a home. But what if one of the things I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think draws those energies to certain places?
See, I think there's an element to all of it. And, you know, obviously trauma, extreme happiness and joy. This is the place I celebrated Christmas, birthdays. I had amazing times. This is the place I had to come in and tell my dad I banged up his car, right? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of emotions. But I also think, now knowing what I know after my ayahuasca journey and realizing how there is a life force to everything, I think the houses and the buildings themselves house memory, not in the stone tape theory method of just it's recording mindlessly. I feel that there's a personality even to things like our home, and that they keep with it the memories of the things that mean something to them. And, you know, I recently was talking to my kids about this, and I said, you know, I'm going to probably move into grandpa's house for a while and see what's going to go on. We really don't want to leave it while we're trying to, you know, not let it go because it means something to us. But I find that homes that no longer have a life force living in them tend to start to collapse in on themselves much faster than homes that have people constantly there. And I think that's very telling. It's an exchange of energies, yours and its, and it is happy to house you and be here for you and give to you as you give to it. So I think there's many different elements to the type of phenomena that we all experience and sometimes dismiss into much smaller categories.
I think so too.
You know, it's just think about it, folks. Think about the homes that you've seen and the people that you've known and the people that have maybe gotten to the stage where they're just not feeling life anymore. And it's like the house around them starts to die. And I really do start to think that that's, you know, that there's an element to that. And it's fascinating to me that you've done clearings and have gone in to do this. When you go in and you're facing this energy, Seth, and there's trauma, is the trauma a spirit itself, or is it like a psychic scar that you just need to clear?
I've noticed through if people, there's a lot of trauma in the house personally. It tends to, there's two places where I notice it in homes, is in closets and in the ceiling. Right. And, for, you know, my house, there was in the ceiling but the closets are where people tend to hide. And when their fears or their anger or their sadness explode out of them. And again, if our body holds an auric sphere around it and we're going through trauma or sadness or whatever, there actually are energetic tears and holes that come in our auric sphere. Right. So if we're, what I've noticed is that when they're in closets, that's where the energies come into the auric field of wherever the person was, and they fester, and now they have a place to live and hide. It's very much like, you know, Monsters, Inc. or Scary Movie. And then in the ceilings as well, there are interdimensional energies seem to come through the ceiling. And, you know, closing them up is... it depends, because some people in the home actually have a contract with these beings. Sometimes I can't clear anything and the person has to clear whatever they're going through themselves. So there's so many doorways and openings and reasons why. And, you know, we can use some of the basic things like prayer, like sage, like putting salt in the corners of our homes. Some people like crosses, some people like certain things, but clearing, just like you said, if you don't put energy into the home, it starts to dwindle and come down in on itself. But if you actually put intention of energy into clearing the home and you command energies and entities to get out of your space and you command them for them to go home, by your command, by your you being a sovereign being, they have to leave, even if you have to do it multiple times. And so that's kind of part of spiritual hygiene. I believe we have to spiritually, you know, have spiritual hygiene on ourselves and in our homes and our relationships to make sure that we're clear of anything that might come in through a tear in our aura, through our anger or frustration or whatever it is that we might have.
you know, you bring up the ceiling and how many times I've been out investigating, and I literally have learned now when I'm doing audio recording, I'll sometimes, if I'm not getting great responses, I lift my hand up in the air and I hold the recorder closer to the ceiling. And people are like, why are you doing that? And I said, I don't know. I've just felt drawn, like the energy is up here. And then I start getting really profound EVP and electronic voice phenomena. For those of you unfamiliar with the term, that's the recording of disembodied voices. But you think about it as well. When we're at our lowest point, a lot of times we cast our view up, right? And if we're suffering and we're sad and we're laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, questioning life, you know, your intent and focus is upwards. So it would make sense to me that some of this trauma, some of this, it's been transferred to the cloud in our home, right? And it's just holding this energy. So that's a fascinating element to this that you brought up for me now to really consider as to why and how that would make sense to where we go. Closets have always baffled people as well. Why are closets and attics so active with energy? And we do. We shelter a lot of that. And as children, sometimes we hide in our closets and we do those things. So I give you a lot of credit in that. I want to talk a little bit about, and we've got about a minute and a half left in this segment, but when we come back, I'd like to go a little deeper into, with this awakening and with what you found, how do you feel that it ties in with religions? And I don't mean just a religion, but religions in general. And just kind of get some of your insight and input on that. With about 20 seconds left in this segment, you've written the book. It'll be out August 8th. What are you really hoping people take away from this book?
That spiritual experiences happen to all of us. And it's actually, you know, nothing new. It's actually a remembrance. And to really follow your heart and go where your heart guides you. Or if you believe in God, go where God guides you. Because one, it's so much more exciting. And it's not like Groundhog's Day, right? And to really live your life while you're here, because all of the amazingness is here on earth.
Seth Stewart, our guest, his book, Follow Your Vision, Live Your Truth, out August 8th. We'll have a link for it on today's program guide. Stay tuned. We've got more to discuss right after this. Sometimes answers come from the most unlikely sources. Would you think a Broadway music star would be the guy that might be the one to help guide you into the next level of your earthly experience? Well, that's why Seth is here. He's written a book. It'll be coming forward here on August 8th. We're excited to share this information, and he's here with us for the remainder of this hour and all next hour. And before we came on the air tonight, he did ask if he could turn the tables on me and ask a few questions of me as the show progresses. So this will be interesting for all. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Seth, for being here with us. When you start doing these awakenings and you're going out and you're really connecting, the big thing that I've had people reach out to me about is what do I believe? What should I believe? What is the reality? You know, there are so many gods, there are so many beliefs, so many systems in play. I tell people I'm based in Christianity. I grew up Lutheran. I have a relationship with God and Christ, and I watch some people roll their eyes while others fully agree and others still just seem lost. I've, in my opinion, have found that it doesn't matter so much who you believe in, because really most of the gods are very loving, kind, caring beings. And even the God of Christianity learned from his mistakes, right? The first part of the Bible, this guy is kind of a jerk, but he's learning, and it takes until he comes to earth to walk in human form and be amongst us that his real appreciation for what he created has more meaning, and we become less playthings and more a favorite of the creations that he's made. And that's why we see more about peace, love, and turning the other cheek once that second half of the book is released. So I find that in most religions, there's a common thread and commonality through it all. And even when you get into the earth-based religions, it's respect, it's love, it's honor, and just doing right for the sake of doing right, not trying to get into heaven, not trying to make it through the pearly gates, but because it's the right thing to do. What do you find in your search and journey has told you about religion and the overall scheme of our world and our lives?
I love that question. My belief is that we are all one. And I believe in the law of one. I believe in oneness with each other. my parents come from different religious backgrounds, and being, you know, mixed race, I've had to have many different perspectives and viewpoints. I've always kind of had to stay between the lines to understand it all. My belief so far is that all of the religions and spirituality, they're all roots to the same tree, right? They all lead us back up to what some of the ancients called the great mystery. Now, this is what I love about spirituality is that your belief never needs to be concrete. That's what I tell people. Whatever you believe right now is absolutely okay, because that's part of oneness, right? I accept you for who you are and what you believe. And I believe that that's what we're getting back to. We have the potential to get back to is that no matter where you're from, we all understand its roots of the same tree that lead back to source, lead back to creator, lead back to this great mystery that here on earth, we're never really fully going to understand. So all the gods, different gods and goddesses that had power, the different earth beings and entities and elements, I just look at them like teachers within this realm. Right. And mm-hmm. I believe that earth is a school. I believe it's one level of many levels of our soul evolution. I believe that we're multidimensional beings, that we have up to 12 dimensional access, even 15 dimensional access. Now, some people will understand that and some people won't, but look at it like grades in a grade school. Your soul has an evolution, just like you go through kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, even past the collegiate level, right? Like up to, that's why I say up to 15. I believe Christ and I believe in Christ, and I do my best to embody Christ consciousness, because I believe Christ and Mary Magdalene came in with a embodiment of their 12 up to 15 dimensional energies, which means they were already graduates and had to learn how to become soul graduates or avatar graduates here on this earth. And they were here to teach others that you can do it as well. But to me, everybody on this planet, every being, every entity on this planet is a part of me and is a part of God. And so I think that we won't judge others, because it's just another version of yourself that is having an experience. It's just another version of God, whether you like it or not, that is having an experience. And so having gratitude and non-judgment are some of the basic things in all of religions. And yet we can't seem to get to that simple place of oneness. But I believe there is a percentage of humanity that will.
Man, I certainly hope so. I think if we could put down the egos, put down the need and desire to always be right and be heard. And now I know that I just upset half the population. Well, we should all be heard. Right. But sometimes it's not about speaking. Sometimes it's just about listening. Sometimes the answers are around us. And if you allow that to come in and actually hear people's soul and hearts when they open up to you, you can lower your defenses. And instead of taking things personally, taking things as a destructive nature, hear the real issues that are at hand and how we can go forward to fix those. You know, we have the tools, right? We all have these amazing abilities and tools. It's just, are we going to engage them, or are we going to continue to just be the me environment?
Yeah, I feel like our natural to kind of yes and that. I feel like our natural baseline, Dave, is actually to be in communion with each other. I think division is something that we're taught. In fact, I know division is something we're taught through religions, through our cultures, through our governments. And I believe that humanity wants to come back to oneness. It's just our governments keep going to war and doing things that we don't necessarily agree with. It's always been that way. Now, I don't know if that's just the level of this game, of this realm, that there mm-hmm. might always be war. I pray that there isn't. But when people point to others that you don't agree with me, I always say, what can I learn from you? Even if I don't agree with you, I'd rather take away and learn something from you than prove my point. Because like Dave is saying, it's like our ego can get in the way of our soul evolution. And I believe we're either here to evolve or you're going to devolve individually.
Right, just like the grape on the vine, right? You're either growing and ripening or you're dying and withering away. What do you choose? And the native and indigenous people talk about the two wolves that live within us, right? There's the strong, powerful wolf, there's the one that is the dark element. The one that wins is the one you feed the most. If you're continually feeding it negativity and despair and anguish, that is the beast that's going to rule you. And you have to choose. And they both need to live and coexist. It's okay to have that dark shadow self. It's okay to do that. You just need to learn to keep things in check with who you are and what you bring about. And I think, too, what we refer to as demons is a lot of the things that we unleash, we let out unknowingly, unwittingly, and that's what we end up having to face. Seth Stewart, our guest, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got him for a whole nother hour right here on the Paranormal 360.